Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Welcome back to Peak Speak, featuring Thomas Lilly and John Sheridan.
You understand if you direct your voice at the microphone like this, and then occasionally you look at the camera and talk like this, it's going to sound different. Just fucking face the camera and talk to the camera, Thomas.
So we got new microphones and we've plugged them in and we sound like Greek gods. My voice sounds like so deep. Sounds amazing. So does yours.
Excellent. I'm excited.
We were just talking off air about, remember that viral video of the man with the golden voice, the homeless guy that they found on the side of the street? It was like before Facebook and Instagram ruled the world, and they found him on the side of the street and he had an amazing voice, and then he got his 5 seconds of fame, and that was like one of the beginnings of viral videos.
Yeah, send me the link. I'm sure I've seen the video, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, I'll send you a link after. What's happening in your world, John?
Man, not a lot. I've got a sweet new microphone, and now we're basically podcast pros. So if you want to sponsor the podcast...
Wait, hang on. Blooper. My dad's calling me. Okay, Sam, we're back. I've finished my phone call with Dad. So...
That's right. Sam's going to get a lot of interesting banter at me just talking shit about you while you're not here.
Wonderful. What did you... What I had asked you, what's been happening in John's world? What's going on?
Not a lot, man. I'm going to Melbourne on the weekend, driving down tomorrow morning to go to a friend's 30th birthday and probably drink too many beers. But other than that, not a lot, man. Just the same things over and over. Venny went to compete in a comp recently and did really well. Hit his first 900 kilo total, which was cool.
Yeah, man, he did awesome.
Yeah, dude, he had an awesome day. Like, went 9 for 9. It kind of sucked that he didn't get the competition that we were kind of hoping for. But that allowed us to be a little bit more, optimistic with the temp selection and stuff. And he had a really good day.
What competition was that?
It's called Ragnarok. I think the guys at Black Flag Barbell run it. It's like an invitational, unaffiliated meet. There was a cash prize, like Venny won like $300. So, you know, that was more money than I've ever won in powerlifting. And I think it'd be really cool. So they did it with essentially IPF rules, but they used a squat bar for squats instead of another Leiko.
Yeah,
But it was all sleeves, walked out squats, combo rack, stiff bar for deads, that sort of stuff, so... It was a really good day. The guys at Chris and Deb at Black Flag ran a really awesome comp. We had a great day. It's a long day, but that's because we left Canberra at 5 a.m. and got home at 6 p.m. or something like that. So,
yeah.
Good day overall.
Massive shout out to Chris and Deb. They're some of the coolest people in powerlifting. I really love that gym. So Black Flag Gym in Castle Hill. Amazing gym. Amazing people. Really cool crew. That's where my where Ricky Chiroki came from. So Ricky's a staff member at my gym, PTC Gold Coast, and
does, okay,
online coaching with me under Zero as well. PTC Gold Coast, we're moving this weekend. I only announced it publicly.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. That's exciting.
Yeah, I only announced it publicly yesterday, but it's kind of been a long time coming. We've had long ongoing issues with our neighbor. You know, it's been bearable for the last, after we got through the initial spat, but it's just probably not the best blend having a powerlifting gym directly next door to an antique shop, which is an old man's retirement fund. Shout out to Rodney. Hopefully he listens to this. Rodney's all right. He's just a bit grumpy.
Set in his ways. That's how old people sometimes get.
Yeah. So, today's topic, we're talking about weaknesses.
Correct.
I think we are very qualified to talk about this because, you know, some people have individual weaknesses. My whole lifting is my weakness, and you're not much different.
Yeah, same, man. I think in terms of weaknesses, my only weakness is that I'm weak, and I just need to be stronger. So, yeah.
So this has kind of come into my mind because, you know, you listen to powerlifting stuff out there. Oftentimes, people are talking about working on their weaknesses. Oftentimes, people are talking about like individual muscle groups being weaknesses. I've got weak quads. I've got my weak back. Oh, my arms are weak. Oh, my triceps are weak. Whatever.
Quad.
As roadblocks.
Quad dominant is my favorite one. Yeah. I'm quad dominant.
Quad dominant, hip dominant, eyeball dominant, whatever dominant you are.
Dick dominant.
Dick dominant. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is extremely inappropriate. Massive apologies to all of our listeners out there. We make no apologies. So today I kind of wanted to unpack that concept a little bit, talk a little bit about our views on weaknesses in lifting, what they are, what they entail, how you can fix them, how you can address them, and what that process kind of looks like. So I guess for me, when I'm talking about any sort of any of this coaching sort of stuff, and I really emphasize this in the mentoring that I do with coaches, is that every part of your system, every decision you make in the coaching process comes down to your philosophy, comes down to what you believe the right way to move is, you believe the right squat, bench, deadlift is. All of that stuff is underpinned by your overall philosophy, right? And I think this largely falls under it. And your understanding of movement, your understanding of technique will really define what you believe weaknesses are. How you define those weaknesses is going to determine how you address them, what exercises you select, and how you select how you perform those exercises. So I kind of want to, start by saying that because how we talk about weaknesses today is really a product of our own personal coaching philosophies, which for you and I is similar but slightly different. You know, every coach has their own little philosophies. So yeah,
every coach should have their own philosophies. Not everyone does. I think there are certainly some coaches who are guilty of just taking someone else's philosophy and using it. And that's not a bad starting point. But from a long-term coaching perspective, you do have to develop your own philosophy and your own approach to things. And I think that, like you said, this is part of our philosophy and part of how we think about training. And, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes with this sort of stuff get caught up in like, oh, right and wrong. And I don't know if right and wrong is the right way to frame a concept like this. It's more about an approach to things. There are plenty of ways to skin a cat. There are plenty of ways to get stronger in powerlifting. And this is just about how we think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's a good way to frame it. To think of it as kind of a range, a spectrum it exists on rather than just black and white and you're at one end of the spectrum, you know, there's a range that we exist on in terms of philosophy. And we kind of spoke about this a little bit back in the episode on systems where we talked about when it comes to addressing technique, you kind of have three levels, right? You have, you know, identification. So being able to identify issues, And I guess that's where we start this conversation is when you're watching someone, when you're watching someone squat, bench, deadlift, how do you identify and define those weaknesses? Because that is going to then determine how you address them. So I think too often people are taking a be-all, end-all approach where it's like they see something break down, they see a movement pattern occur, and then instantly they jump to weak this, weak that. For example, one of the most common ones is like knees caving in. Okay, weak glutes, do more glute work, therefore knees will stay out. And it's just simply not quite as simple as that, right? I just said simply twice.
You realize you just, twice. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad you picked up on it. I think that's often that approach probably comes from a lack of experience more than anything else. It becomes a case of, you know, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail. So I think that in my experience, it is a viewpoint taken by more inexperienced coaches who are repurposing knowledge that someone else has given them and not necessarily understanding the movement itself, and the biomechanics behind it, and even the communication model behind it, like how you talk to people and how you describe things in this instance is also really important. Just jumping straight to the muscle thing is hard, right? My favorite one is talking about this sort of framework is people who say, oh, like this exercise works these muscles better. Like maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but unless you've got a whole stack of EMG electrodes and you're actually wired into everything that's going on, it's really hard to say that it's because of this activation or that activation. And I think it's kind of irrelevant in many ways. I think understanding the movement pattern itself is the first point of call for any of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I was just snickering in the background before because this microphone is really clear and Buddy's on the floor over there chewing a toy really loudly and it's all I can hear through the microphone.
One of the first instructional videos I filmed using a camera with like a proper external mic, I had taken my dogs to the gym and I'd given them both like marrow bones to chew on. And so all you can hear in the background underneath my voice is this constant scraping of teeth on bone. It was, it was an interesting experience. I learned my lesson that day.
Yeah. I'm kind of in two minds. Like I want to take it off him, but he's so happy right now. I think my voice will kind of drown out the squeaking in the background.
Exactly.
Right. So to kind of pick up on what you were just saying just now, I totally agree with that. And I agree with most of it. What I don't quite agree with, I think, you mentioned it's a case of experience. I think more people will go that way when they're inexperienced. But by the same token, man, lately I've been listening to some podcasts and lately I've been reading some stuff. And there are some very experienced, very knowledgeable people out there that are still diverting to that kind of way of thinking. And again, it's just aligning with their individual coaching philosophy. But it seems just too reductionist because, squat, bench, deadlift, what we're doing, it's easy to minimize it and say, these are simple movements. Whereas I go the opposite way in powerlifting, they're the most complex iterations of all the movements that we do. You think of all the exercises you're doing, all the accessories that you're doing in terms of what requires the most coordination, in terms of what has the most complexity around it. They're multi-joint movements. There's a lot of stability required in many joints. There is a case for chasing technical perfection. When things break down, it's not quite as simple as one thing is weak, therefore the whole system breaks down. Generally it's a systematic, it's a positional weakness. It's not a case of one muscle is doing more work than all of the other. And exactly like you just said, how on earth do you measure that? I mean, we have ideas of systematic breakdown based on our experience as coaches, right? But there's no real way of measuring.
And our understanding of biomechanics as well.
Yes, exactly.
Which is part of that.
There's no real way as a coach you can completely accurately measure, okay, well, this thing's working way harder than this other thing, and that's causing this to happen, right? It's more addressing systematic weakness. It's more about addressing positional weakness than anything, in my view, right? So a good way to kind of explain this in a more tangible sense would be to maybe break down a couple of common weaknesses, a couple of common movement patterns that we see. Well, I reckon we start with something really simple, right? So you'd see this all the time. I see this all the time. Most people in powerlifting would see this all the time. A deadlift rocketing off the floor, loss of back position, and then getting stuck, a few inches before lockout, right?
It's just do heaps of rack lockouts and you'll be sweet.
Yeah, right? So people will say, well,
Weak back.
Their hips aren't coming forward, right? So their hips are weak. Or, they're not being able to, straighten their back up right at the top. So doing a shitload more rows and lat work. It's really incomplete thinking. It's like, it'd be like the equivalent of bashing your head with a hammer every day and going to the doctor and the doctor going, okay, well, here's some Panadol. It's like, well, it's not the fact that there's missing Panadol. It's the fact that you're bashing yourself in the head in the with the hammer. It's not the fact that you're not doing rack pulls and lat work. It's the fact that there's a systematic, a technical breakdown that's happening early that's causing that loss in strength in that position. So it's about fixing the starting position and learning to hold that so you've got the adequate room to leverage through once the bar gets above your knees.
I think it's it comes from a very sort of narrow-minded approach to things and a misunderstanding of what breakdown is symptomatic of, right? That positional breakdown happens like in a deadlift, right? Where we're looking at the example of your deadlift breaks down because your back sort of rounds over as you come off the floor. And a lot of people do this, like you said, they rocket things off the floor and then it runs into a wall mid-thigh. So people address what their deadlift looks like from the mid-thigh position, right? But it breaks down at that point because of something that happened earlier in the movement. And in the case of the deadlift, it's almost always because you compromised your trunk position coming off the floor, and that put you in a spot where, like you said, you get to that mid-thigh position, you don't have the leverage to actually bring your hips through in a good position. So I think often that reductionist approach just comes from not looking at the movement as a whole and instead just looking at pieces and understanding that that breakdown happens much earlier than it's always visible. Like sometimes it's broken down and it only exhibits that breakdown as you get right to that position. It's the same for pain and injuries often, like the elbow pain you feel in your squat or in your bench press isn't from your elbow, it's from your shoulder in the bench press or your shoulders in the squat. So it pays in this circumstance to have a really broad view of looking at things as a system. And we continue to talk about this idea of systems, but I think it's really important to know that nothing happens in isolation in powerlifting. Nothing in these movements happens by itself. It's all about the whole system working together. And as you start to understand the system itself better, you can then start to identify the cause of these breakdowns.
Yeah. And one really important thing that you just touched on there is like people looking at pieces of the system, so parts of the movement. And that's not necessarily incorrect logic. Like, I understand the logic of, hey, I'm failing at lockout, therefore let's get my lockout stronger. It's just perhaps incomplete logic. It's not seeing the bigger picture necessarily. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong with weak point training. This is a really important concept that that kind of dawned on me a couple of years ago and it's really stuck with me, is that you can strengthen a shitty system, right? So, you know, let's say you are in that deadlift position, and you always lose it at lockout, you can do a heap of rack pulls. You can make your lats stronger and you can strengthen that particular part of the shitty system. And what you'll see happen is your deadlift will creep up a bit and you'll be like, well, I found the secret, right? Do more rack pulls, do more lat work. But the system will, as a whole, always be self-limiting because of those positional weaknesses. So while you can see progress in that lift, in that position, perhaps it'll be always limited by the fact that you are in that position. And it's a really common thing across the board, right?
And it comes from people who also like to use the expression, it works for me, in terms of their technical skill and things like that. Like, oh, my deadlift, like, it works for me and it's getting stronger. It's the same idea. It might be working for you right now and it might work for you into the short-term future, but at some point it will become a rate limiter. And that you can't outwork positions, right? At a certain point, you'll get really, really strong and you just stop making progress, or you'll start getting hurt. It was Drew Spriggs actually said once that it's best to get good and then get strong. And that's something I try and instill in a lot of newer and novice level lifters. Like, it's really, really easy to get strong. You've just got to work really hard for a reasonable amount of time. But understanding and controlling your position and transferring that over in terms of skill development is the harder part. And that's where a lot of people run into issues with this sort of stuff around weakness identification and things like that. You just get to a point where, you're just bashing your head against the same wall over and over and not making any progress. And it becomes really frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. Another really common one is failing at lockout on bench press. So, you know, I talked about coaching philosophy a little bit earlier. Let me give you guys a kind of an overview of where I stand with my coaching philosophy. So in terms of biomechanics, in terms of movement, my belief is that at the bottom position of a lift, so bottom of the squat, chest on the bench press, starting position on deadlift, that is the hardest position to move weight from, just due to the sum of the moment arms being the greatest at that point. And as those moment arms shorten, it gets easier to lift more weight. So doing half a bench press is easier than doing a full bench press. It's not entirely accurate, just because there's some things to take into account, like stored elastic energy, like torque in that bottom position. But for the most part, that's kind of what my philosophy kind of revolves around, right? So if you're failing something at the top of a lift where theoretically it should be the easiest part, it says to us that there's been a breakdown somewhere else in the system, right? I talked a little while ago on one of my Instagram stories about the concept of leverage, because it's a term that's thrown around a heap in powerlifting, like maximizing leverage, all this kind of stuff. The concept of leverage kind of has this underlying assumption that everything in that system is fixed and rigid. You think about how a deadlift jack works. When you pull on the deadlift jack, everything is fixed to each other. Everything's welded together and solid so that you can lift up that weight on the end of the bar. You imagine if any part of that system was loose or broken or made out of rubber or made out of string or something loose, you wouldn't be able to lever that thing up, right? In a way of very oversimplifying our bodies, we're much the same. If anything in that system, when we're trying to move weight, is loose, is undone, then we're going to see power leak through that looseness. We're going to see power escape through that looseness. So in the example of the deadlift, power's escaping through your back when you lose it in round four. And therefore, that loss of power has to be expressed somewhere else in the system, and it gets expressed when you get stuck above your knees. In the same way, you know, in the concept of a bench press, we're trying to use our pec to lever our arm across the body to move the weight upwards. That assumes that the shoulder is solid and stable and fixed in position. Our shoulders are amazing joints. They can move in a big range, more range than most joints in our body. And with that in mind, they're a bit harder to fix into position. So if there's any looseness, if there's loss of position in that shoulder while you're pressing, you can expect power to leak out of the system and then be expressed later in that system. So you think if you're pushing and rather than your pec levering your arm across the body, it's just levering your shoulder out of position, eventually you're going to run out of room, effectively, you know, it's not quite that simple, run out of space to continue to lever your arm across the body, and that's when you get stuck at lockout. And again, you know, you can address that. You can be like, okay, my triceps are weak, I'm going to do heaps of heavy pin lockouts, I'm going to do heaps of presses against band, and you can strengthen that overall system without addressing the weakness that is probably the cause of the lack of movement in that system. However, with a bigger picture sort of approach, you can start to see that, well, maybe the issue isn't locking out at that point in time. The tricep argument on bench press is a little bit odd. If your triceps were too weak to lock out that the weight that you had, how did you ever hold it when you unracked the weight in the first place? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think you nailed it well there, talking about understanding the positions and using some of those like targeted exercises. They will help, especially when used in... I love the pants. I only just saw your pants. That's great. So those movements and strengthening those muscles can be effective, as long as you're doing it alongside technical improvements, because getting stronger overall will help you lift more weight. But like you said, if your system is inefficient, if there's you're losing torque or you're losing whatever fucking technical word you want to use there, you lose the ability to exhibit your strength, right? So I often talk about the concept of you have an absolute max and a technical max.
Mm.
And from a coaching perspective, my philosophy revolves around spending as much time as we can dealing with a number that's based on a technical max, not an absolute max.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, I don't really give a shit what your absolute max is. That's something that should be reserved for competition and you know, circumstances where it matters. But in training, training's your opportunity to practice movements and to develop movement patterns. And the closer your technical max is to your absolute max, the stronger you're going to be on the platform, because your system is more efficient. You're exhibiting more of the strength that you have. And that will allow you to continue to be stronger for the long term. But also, it's far, you're far less likely to hurt yourself if you're in an efficient system, because you're not having things loaded in a way that exposes them to potential injury. Like, there's a lot of people, especially in powerlifting as well, who come out of, you know, they've been gym bros forever, and so they got really, really strong. We saw an example of this at this comp with Venny. There was a dude there who was really, really strong, but had no concept of powerlifting as a sport, hadn't really done anything around the technical skill of the sport, and so he left a lot of kilos on the platform. Given a little bit of coaching and a little bit of guidance around positions and stuff like that, he'd be way, way stronger. But because his system is inefficient, because he's leaking force at some point, he's going to run into problems. You're not going to be able to make that progress in the long term. So I think it's important to have both a plan for getting stronger in, you know, muscle groups that perhaps are weak, perhaps they're weak, perhaps they're not, but it's got to go hand in hand with improvements in technical skill. Because otherwise, you can run every program in the world and you might find some work better for you than others, but inevitably, you're going to come back to that point where you just can't make progress because your system doesn't allow you to be efficient enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think one thing I kind of want to clarify on what you just said earlier, you said, I don't give a shit about your true max. I think what you really mean when you say that is that you're not impressed by anyone's true max, right? We've been in this game long enough to have seen all the numbers, and you know, numbers don't necessarily impress us, because everything you just said there about improving someone's lifting, we do this so they can lift more weight. That at the end of the day, that's our goal, right? Make them lift more weight, and the way they're going to lift more weight and is a safer, more efficient, stronger sort of position. That's our ultimate goal with that. So, just for anyone who's like, well, John doesn't care about how much people lift. He really does care about how much people lift.
Yeah.
We're just not impressed by it, right?
I also care about how you lift that way.
Yeah.
Because if your third attempt looks like you might die, well, then your third attempt at the next comp probably is going to look very similar. But if you leave that third attempt and it looks hard and you really had to work for it, but you managed to maintain really high quality positions and nothing really broke apart, then you're going to be in a much better position. I always like how Mark Bell talks about how strength is never a weakness. The problem with that as a phrase is I think strength is actually the easy part. I think if strength is your weakness, that's really easy to correct. You know, if your positions fail you and your ability to maintain positions from a technical standpoint fails you over the long term, that's way harder to work on. It takes a much bigger ego check to take the weight off on the bar and work at a weight that you can maintain high quality positions. But working really hard and getting strong is the easy part. So I think a lot of people fail to recognize that working hard isn't the only solution. You have to work smart to a certain extent. You have to be able to either guide yourself or have someone to guide you through how to improve your technique and how to understand the positions better so that you can make that progress in the long term.
Yeah, I think what's often overlooked is the fact that the strongest way to lift the weight is the safest way to lift the weight, is the most efficient way to lift the weight. They all go hand in hand, right? So learning to move better is your fast track, if you will, to lifting more weight. Lifting consistently is a fast track to lifting more weight, and you know, they all go together. If you're lifting safer, you're going to lift longer because you're not going to be injured, and if you're lifting safer, it means you're lifting more efficient, and if you're lifting more efficient, you're going to move more weight. And at the end of the day, especially, you know, me as a powerlifting coach and putting on my hat as a power lifter as well, my goal is to lift more weight. My goal for my clients is to lift more weight. That's why they come to me, right? And to get them to lift more weight, that means making sure that they move well.
It's also important to clarify that when you say my goal is to lift more weight, or my goal for my athletes is to lift more weight, it's to lift more weight for a long time. It's yes. not to lift more weight in the next 6 weeks or to lift more weight in the next 12 weeks. I mean, fuck, it's not even necessarily the next 12 months. I often talk about powerlifting as a sport of months, years, and decades, not days, weeks, and months. And I think if, because I can, like, I can take anyone and you can take anyone and we can throw them through a really heavy, really hard training cycle and they'll probably make some improvement in the short term. But the conversation has to be around, is this the best option in the long term?
Yes.
Because if you do powerlifting well, you can continue to be a good powerlifter for a very, very long time, but you have to do it in a smart and efficient manner.
So continuing on with like systematic versus muscular or individual muscular weakness, one thing I really want to talk about here is that first initial example I mentioned about knees caving in on squats. So how your knees move is really a reflection, and how your ankles move is really a reflection of what your hips are doing. What your hips are doing, squats is probably one of the more complex ones. If I had to rate the lifts in terms of technicality, I'd put bench way at the top. I'd put squats somewhere, you know, soon underneath bench, and conventional deadlifts kind of down the bottom. Sumo deadlifts would fall pretty close to bench as well. You know, they're both highly technical and highly unnatural movements.
I agree with that. I also think it's I often describe it as bench press is often like a little bit more simple because it's a shorter range of motion and there's less to deal with around like hips, knees, ankles, all that sort of stuff. But it requires a much higher level of precision because the margin for error in those positions is a lot smaller. It's by no means a simple lift to do, but the margin for error in that position is much, much higher. And it's the same with sumo deadlifts, right? That little technical mishap or little change in position often correlates to a really big change in the way you're able to lift or the amount of weight you're able to lift.
Yeah, big time. So, you know, one common thing around hips and knees caving in on squat and all that kind of stuff, right? Glutes are weak, okay? Your glutes are weak, do more glute work and your thing will get stronger. The thing is, how that weakness is expressed is really a result of position. And, you know, knees caving in is not necessarily because of a muscular weakness, but because of a positional error. When we're talking about maximizing the... because, I mean, ultimately, like I said, these are the most complex iterations of movement that we have in powerlifting. Our job is to set up a system whereby everything's working together to move that weight, right? And deviations in that system will manifest in these apparent weaknesses. When we're talking about squats, our number one, everything's kind of centering around pelvic stability. If you have a stable pelvis, if the hips are stable, then the muscles around the hips can do their job in the most effective manner. As soon as you lose that pelvic stability, so when I'm talking about pelvic stability, I'm talking about like anterior tilt, posterior tilt, you know, a loss of pelvic position, then you're going to see issues arise, which are going to appear like weaknesses, right? So if your pelvis is in a really bad position, it's harder to use your glutes. So that doesn't mean they're weak. It just means they're not in the position where they can be used as effectively. And in that case, maybe the weakness is nothing to do with the glutes at all. Maybe the weakness is like a core stability weakness. And even saying that, you know, training an individual muscle group isn't necessarily going to carry over into your squat. It's more about learning to hold the right positions while you're moving. So often you'll see people doing strengthening exercises for muscles that don't ever make it into their technique just because they're so far removed from how we want to use those muscles in that kind of movement. Does that make sense?
It definitely does. And I think a lot of that, and like from my coaching perspective, like one of the first things I look at when I watch someone that I've never seen lift before, be it in person or on video or whatever, the first thing I look for is often like a change in tempo. And it happens a lot in the squat where people get to the bottom and they try and like really bounce out of that bottom position. They lose that position of pelvis stability, their knees cave in, all of those things add up to an inefficient squat. But often I find that the positions where they change tempo are a great indicator of, okay, that's where I'm going to start to look a little bit more intently about why are you changing your tempo here, because it's probably you can't control that position anymore. So, and in the squats, one of the first things I do is just have people slow right down. And almost always their knee cave goes away, right? Because at a speed where you can control your position better, it's easier to negate that weakness. Mm. And so with that, it's important to understand that if you can change it with something as simple as slowing it down or lowering the weight, then perhaps it's not just that muscular weakness, especially from the slowing it down standpoint, because there's an argument for slowing things down being actually harder to do, right? It's harder to do a really heavy 5-second eccentric squat than it is to do it at your normal competition tempo, because the time under tension means your muscles are fatiguing quicker. They're therefore not able to produce as much force on the reversal, all of those sort of things. So if you can change the presentation of that weakness with something as simple as slowing the movement down or lowering the weight a little bit, it's probably a good indicator that that weakness is in fact positional and not muscular.
Mm. Yeah. So in terms of then, you've identified this positional weakness, how are we going to address it? I think it's really important that, how we address it is defined by what we've identified. So if you've identified the weakness as not necessarily an individual muscle group, which it actually may be, in some cases it is. Most of the time it's a positional thing. It's a systematic thing. If you regress
or
immediately...
a combination.
Sorry?
I just said, or a combination. We need to work on this system so that we're not talking over the top of each other all the time. We'll figure that out. We're not quite pros yet.
Yeah. We sound amazing. Once you've identified that weakness, how you then address it is going to be really, again, defined by what that actual weakness is. And most of the time it's a systematic weakness, right? So if you go immediately to the lowest regression of that movement and then expect it to carry over, you're kind of missing the point. It's like, okay, well, core bracing is not great. That doesn't mean your abs are necessarily weak. It just means that you're uncoordinated in that particular movement. So if you regress all the way back to like a dead bug or a bird dog and do heaps and heaps of those, you're kind of pulling at straws if you expect your bird dog to influence your 300 kilo squat. It's about, okay, well, let's go back in a systematic fashion and break the system down slowly and see where the kinks are that need to be ironed out. Let's go down to a pause squat or a tempo squat. Okay, that's still falling apart. Okay, let's go down to a good morning or an RDL. Okay, that's still falling apart. Well, then we need to start thinking about can we do some isolation stuff? Okay, there's the weakness. We need to take that. All right, start doing that. But then you need to apply it to your RDL and your good morning. And then you need to apply that system into your pause squat or your tempo squat. And then you need to start putting that into your main squat. And that's where it's really important, that concept of what you mentioned earlier of this technical max, is that the more you train above that technical max, the more that that systematic weakness is just going to be manifesting, because you are just reinforcing that technical error, right? And that's not to say, okay, well, you squat 300 kilos, your technical max is 250, never squat over 250 kilos. It's just we want to spend a little bit more time and attention under that point. And in powerlifting, you've got the time to do that. You only need to be strong when you need to be strong, which for us is, around competitions. The rest of the time should be spent on making sure that when you are strong, when you do need to be strong, that you're stronger than you were last time. And you can get really good, meaningful training. Like, again, using that example, 300 kilo squat, 250 kilo technical max. Most of your training should be happening underneath that 250 point anyway, because that's where all your hypertrophy, your work capacity, your volume work needs to happen. And that's your opportunity to change, to ensure and get stronger in those positions. So once you start to go above 250, all of a sudden your 250 technical max is now 280 and your 300 kilo absolute max is now 315. That's our goal, is to make you better so that when you do need to be strong again, you're stronger than you were before.
On the about regressions and things like that, I mostly agree with you on that. I think the one caveat I have to that is sometimes those regressions are useful for demonstrating a point or demonstrating a position, and then go, okay, like maybe we're going to go and do this dead bug, and I'm going to show you what it feels like to maintain torso position while you move at the hip and shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to go back to the squat, and we're literally just going to go, okay, we're going to do this squat, do some dead bugs, come back and do the squat again. And then sometimes just that is enough to show a person what it feels like to be in that position, or allow them to just understand that movement a little bit better. So those regressions, sometimes going right back to basics and then going immediately back to the squat works. It doesn't always work, but in some people that regression is enough to give them the feedback loop that they need to understand that position better. I think from a training standpoint, that's not to say you stop squatting and you just do a shitload of dead bugs, but instead what you do is you understand that applying these assistance exercises or targeted weakness training or whatever you want to term it as has to be around how does it carry over to those lifts, not just about the muscular weakness. And so sometimes using them as a teaching tool, like I like tempo squats, and it's not necessarily because I'm using a tempo squat to get you stronger in your squat, but it's more as a technical practice movement. And so that's where it's important to again define the difference between practice and training, because sometimes what you just need is practice at a movement, and that practice comes through training, but it also sometimes comes separate to training. Not every weight you have to lift, that you ever lift, has to be a weight that you're aiming to get a strength training effect from. Sometimes you can just practice a movement and be better at the movement, which is going to help bring that technical max closer to your absolute max and mean that you can exhibit a stronger, you know, lift over the long term.
Yeah, so what you touched on there is really the difference between weakness and coordination, which is a really important concept in these complex movements, right? Because they are highly coordinated. And, you know, again, it's like you can't look at a squat and be like, that person's core is weak. If they train their core 3 times a week and they have done every week for 2 years, their core's probably not weak, but their ability to exhibit that strength within a complex movement might be the thing that's lacking. And that's kind of an important context, concept, because if you don't have that ability to coordinate everything, you can identify these weaknesses and spend a lot of time addressing weaknesses that don't actually exist, which can be not the best use of time in your training. I think that's probably a really good way to wrap this up. Otherwise, we're gonna, you know, we've said really what the concept of weakness is, and address kind of how to identify it and then start to fix it. Is there anything that you particularly want to add to that?
I have one final point to make, and that comes around asking for coaching advice of either randoms or qualified coaches on the internet. If you send me a message that says my knees cave in when I squat, what exercises should I do to fix it? Almost always I'm going to say, I don't know. Or do you have a video? Because describing the way the movement happens isn't enough information to give you an accurate answer. Because for you, it might be that you do have a muscular weakness and you need to address that. For someone else, it might be that coordination thing. So when you go around asking for technical advice on the internet, look at the bigger picture and understand that from a coaching perspective, I need more information than just you describing in 15 words what your squat looks like. So if you want to provide that information, I'm always happy to help. I like helping. I like helping identify weaknesses. And sometimes it's not just as simple as having a video of yourself. Sometimes it involves having to get someone else to look at that video. Because I imagine that the way you, Thomas, look at videos and the way I look at videos is a lot different to the way a powerlifter who's only been lifting for 2 years looks at things. Because at that point, I can see things in patterns because I've watched hundreds or thousands of people squat, and therefore I'm in a position where I will see things in a video that you might not necessarily see. So you need the context more than anything else. Just describing a movement as, oh, my knees cave in, or, oh, you know, my back rounds when I deadlift, it's not that simple. That is really the message of the whole thing. Don't be that guy, especially as a coach, don't be the person who says your knees cave in, you need more glute work, because it makes us all look bad and you're making it worse for everyone else. Thomas has just hung up on me, and so this is just me finishing out the podcast. I don't know what's going on here. Hopefully you've enjoyed the solo version of PeakSpeak, because Thomas isn't coming back now. He's gone. I'm trying to call him back. Well, Sam, do you want to take over Thomas's position on this podcast? Because at this point, I'm inclined to fire him. He's not answering. I don't know what I do here. He has 2% phone battery. So I think Thomas's phone has died, which leaves us with the final outro for PeakSpeak being just me. And if you would like to vote for Thomas being kicked off the show, please send your votes to john@burleystrength.com. I will collate the votes and then summarily eject Thomas from the podcast. That's about it from us, folks. I would very much appreciate it if you give us a 5-star review. This is my co-host calling me back. Hold on. Let's see if we can bring him back in here. I was just telling our lovely podcast listeners that they can vote on whether we should kick you off the podcast or not due to your lack of technical skills. So as I've said to everyone, please send me your votes so I can eject Thomas from the podcast and it can become the John Sheridan Show.
Yes, look, I will admit, the organization this morning has been
suboptimal.
Less, yes, very suboptimal. I'm blaming the move and the inherent stress that exists with that.
I'm blaming my shitty podcast partner for having shitty excuses for his shitty performance, but, you know, whatever.
You really don't beat around the bush, do you?
No, that's why they call me Johnny the Blunt Man Sheridan.
You're way too good at those.
All right. That one wasn't my best, but anyway.
Did you finish off the podcast or what?
Yeah, I kind of did, and then you called me back and interrupted my finishing. So I was just going to say to everyone, feel free to leave us a 5-star review, write something funny, maybe we'll read it on the air, maybe we'll just continue to steal our entire podcast from Jug Life and be like that. But ultimately, tell your friends, share it with a mate,
put it on Instagram so we can share. We really like doing that.
Yeah, exactly. That's always great to see people listening. So tag us in your things. You can find me at Just Shero on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. Or you can follow my gym at Burley Strength on Facebook and Instagram. Thomas, where can people find you?
I am at TomBro7 on Instagram, as well as PTC Gold Coast on Instagram and Facebook.
Excellent. Well, this has been fun. I hope Sam has enjoyed the incredible ineptitude of us both as technological retards. But hopefully you've also all enjoyed the dulcet tones that we get from professional quality audio equipment.
This is TJS 799.
Perfect.
All right. See you next time.
Yes.